Welcome to the Awakened Parent Project, Conscious Conversations, Empowered Parenting, with me, Susan Dolce. It's time to open our hearts and our minds to what it means to be a parent, exploring and expanding the ways we communicate, validate, and show up daily for our kids. With a parent-centric focus, you learn to become more present, a better active listener, more reflective, more engaged, and mutually empowered. Parenting isn't about perfection. It's about presence, honesty, self-compassion, unconditional love, and conscious communication. The Awakened Parent Project starts now. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Awakened Parent Project. I'm your host. I'm Susan Dolce. I'm a certified parent coach with the Jai Institute for Parenting. And it's my hope that you will find this a safe space to journey on a path of both practical and spiritual self-exploration. From the time my first daughter was born in 1994, I've been driven by a vision where children are nurtured both physically and spiritually by adults who are present, grounded, and empowered. I believe that conscious communication, self-exploration, and self-forgiveness are the tools that enable parents to foster deep, lasting connections with their children. Parenting isn't about perfection. It's about presence, honesty, self-compassion, unconditional love, and conscious communication. And I'm really excited for today's guest because I feel it's a topic that's rarely discussed. And that's, how do we help our children grieve and heal, especially when we're also grieving? Today, I'm speaking with Michelle Benyo about the four keys to help grieving children heal. Michelle is a certified grief recovery specialist, a parent coach, and the founder of Good Grief Parenting. After her six-year-old son died of cancer, her three-year-old daughter said, "Mommy, half of me is gone." This heartbreaking statement focused Michelle's career as an early childhood parenting specialist on the impact of grief on young children, particularly after child loss. Michelle equips parents and other caring adults to recognize young children's grief and to provide the support children need to cope with any loss. The desire of Michelle's heart is to see families live forward after loss toward a future bright with possibilities and hopefully even joy. Welcome, Michelle. Welcome.
Thank you, Susan. I'm really happy to be here. Thanks.
You know, I think I mentioned this when we were exchanging some emails. I'm going to get choked up. I can't imagine what your story is like. I watched my mother grieve the loss of a child, but he was 53. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine what it's like to lose a child at such a young age. Mm-hmm. And the work that you're doing, I'm so excited to have you on the show. I want everybody to know that you exist out there because I think this is so important. Mm-hmm. So I know I briefly touched on it, but could you tell us a little bit more about what good grief parenting is and how the whole thing came to be?
Yes. Well, first of all, I just want to say I'm so happy to be here because your whole approach to parenting is the one that I've carried forward from my own years as a kid being parented. And I was an early childhood parent educator before I ever had any reason to found Good Grief Parenting. And so my heart was very much where yours is. And I came into a situation where I had a 4.5-year-old son, and he had a little sister, 15 months old, and he was diagnosed with cancer. And I had no experience in anything like this. It was no longer parenting as usual. And we journeyed this for 2.5 years where I had to figure out how to help my young child who was experiencing this disease ravaging his body, but also this 15-month-old who was a bystander, but very much involved. And then, of course, after 2.5 years, David died, and she was 3.5. And she said, "Mommy, half of me is gone." And I knew that was a true statement because of what we know about child development and sibling bonds and identity formation in those early years. And so much harder for me than my own devastating loss of losing my bright, tender-hearted firstborn son was knowing that his little sister was going to grow up without him. She had no other siblings, and there was nothing I could do about that. And I had no expertise. This was 20 years ago. She's 25 now. And I will say that back then, there were no Facebook groups there, and there was no real support either. There were support groups, which are good, but I needed something more than just that help with the loss. I needed to know how to help her live her life forward. So I took the information that I knew as an early childhood parenting expert and learned what I didn't know about grief, and have been just studying that and learning more about sibling loss and grief over the years. And now really do want to fill a place that I'm seeing after all of these years that no one is still filling. I really do know parents need help with parenting while grieving. It's the two hardest jobs we'll ever have. And to try to do the two together is unthinkable. So that's how I came to form Good Grief Parenting.
Well, again, like I said, you know, I can't imagine. I saw what my mom was going through. Mm-hmm. And again, my brother was 53 several years ago. He passed away from cancer also. And
sorry.
Thank you. I'm sorry for your loss also. Mm-hmm. And to imagine, like, first of all, it's hard enough to navigate our own grief, as you've mm-hmm. mentioned, and all of and you talk a lot about our beliefs around grief or how we've been taught to grieve, right. Whether, you know, appropriately or inappropriately, whether, you know, we're taught that, you know, hurry up and get over it or you know, don't show your emotions you know, all of the misconceptions about, mm-hmm. about grief. But yet then to do that, teach those lessons for a child mm-hmm. while you're going through it.
Right, right. And I will just say that, you know, I mean, I'm sure you found, here you are, you're talking about what it was like for your mom to lose her son. But there was this sister who lost her brother. And I think siblings will tell you, whatever age they are, everyone recognizes the loss of the parent, but there's the loss of the sibling as well. And that is just such an important thing to keep track of.
And it wasn't.
Yeah, yeah. So with children, and I lost the question, Susan.
Oh, no, it's okay.
I went back and picked up.
Yeah, I was just talking about, like, you know, because you do talk a lot about,
oh, yes,
there's a lot of myths and misconceptions about grief. Yeah.
And it starts right there with how children experience grief. How they experience it, number one, and also that we don't want them to feel that pain and we shouldn't let them feel the pain. And so the difficult thing with children when we're grieving is that we learned all of these things from adults about, you know, don't show kids your feelings, don't talk to them about it, don't show anyone your feelings. And these are things that prevent us as the griever from going through grief. The thing I learned that I didn't know, because I was one of these people, I was kind of, okay, what do I do with grief? How do I do this? And I thought there was a right way. And I've learned there isn't a right way, number one. And I've learned that I call my business Good Grief Parenting, because I've learned that grief is not this horrible, awful thing to be avoided. It actually is how we heal. We need to go through these difficult feelings and feel them and recognize that they're not gonna hurt us. I mean, the pain hurts, but they're not gonna kill us, to be frank about it. We will get through it and we will come out better for it. If we didn't learn that as children ourselves, how are we gonna help our children learn how to grieve properly? So, or healthily is what I mean when I say properly. And so I start with parents by helping them recognize, what is it you believe about grief? And how did that work for you when you were growing up? How did it feel when you grieved? And don't you want to help your child experience grief in a little bit better way? So it really is a starting point, Susan. You're so right to look at those things that we believe about grief that don't serve us well.
Well, and one of the things you highlight too is that it's not necessarily, I mean, it's tragic to lose a sibling, but we experience loss in so many other ways, and children are going to experience, like you say, children are going to experience loss in their childhood. And so it might not be quite as devastating as a death, but still learning how to deal with loss in a healthy manner.
Oh, yes. And that's so true. This is such an important point. I love a quote from Mark Twain, actually, where he says, anything that grieves us is he says, nothing that grieves us is little. A child's loss of a doll and a king's loss of a crown are the same size. Kids grieve things that my story that I share is about Wally the walrus. I ask adults to think about, when was the first time you experienced grief? Because I guarantee you it was in young childhood. It probably wasn't the death of a person, but it was still grief. And I remember mine. Mine was on the beach in northern Minnesota. I grew up on Lake of the Woods, and I was at the beach that went on forever off to the horizon, and I was having a lot of fun riding on Wally the walrus, a blow-up toy, and I fell off of him, and he scooted away from me, and I couldn't reach him, and none of the adults who could swim could reach him, and he just went too far out, and I had to stand on the beach and watch him float and float and float to the horizon. And to this day, I remember how that felt. It wasn't sadness. It was grief. Grief is that feeling of something important to me is gone and I will never have it back again. And it's a horrible feeling, even when it's just Wally the walrus. So how did my parents respond to that? I honestly don't remember, but I do remember my childhood, and I'm sure the response was something like, you know, it's just a toy. Go play with something else. Just a little bit of acknowledging, oh, you were having so much fun and you really like Wally, and oh, it's really hard to know that he's gone and you can't play with him anymore. That's honoring grief. And we need to start honoring these griefs in childhood. If this had happened to me today, Susan, I wouldn't have grieved Wally the walrus because my griefs are different now. But children have those, and it's very much grief, even though we don't, to an adult, it wouldn't be.
I remember my first grief story. I won't share it right now because we're going to go into a break. Maybe later on I'll share it because it is kind of funny, but I still feel it, and it's still awful. I totally get where you're coming from. Today, we are talking with Michelle Benio about the four keys to help children grieve and heal. We're going to take a quick break. This is the Awakened Parent Project. We'll be right back.
Optimize your breast cancer screening without any radiation or pain. Effective, sensitive, and widely used thermal imaging in Europe is now available to you here in the U.S. Using state-of-the-art FDA-approved camera, Eastside's first and only breast thermography clinic is now open in Bellevue. Safe, sensitive, low cost, no referrals needed. Contact Holistic Medical Center at 425-451-0404 or on the web, drdarvish.com.
If you've ever had a broken heart, you know how painful that can be and how long it can sometimes take to heal it. I'm Megan Edge, author of The Heart's Journey, Healing Hearts, Oracle Cards, and Guidebook, published with Balboa Press and Hay House. In The Heart's Journey, I share with you my own heartbreak and how I healed it through the beautiful hearts that found me in nature. From taking photographs of these hearts for myself, I've created this beautiful toolkit, which includes the guidebook, which has my story, how to work with oracle cards as a healing tool, and the story of each of these hearts as they cross my path. I've also created a beautiful journal. There's a pen, a bookmark, and of course, the 42 Healing Hearts oracle cards. You can order The Heart's Journey, Healing Hearts, Oracle Cards, and Guidebook through my website, meganedge.ca, through Balboa Press, Amazon, and many other places online or your local shops. I look forward to hearing about your heart's healing.
Do you ever wonder why you are put here on this earth? What your soul is being called to do? What brings you the greatest satisfaction? Tune in to the Personal Wisdom Show with Mita Johnson on TransformationTalkRadio.com, where she will help you learn to really lean in and trust the wisdom and power within you, creating a success you never thought possible. If you want to grow this wisdom inside you and understand your life purpose, visit PersonalWisdomCoachingNow.com.
Courtney Cottrell is walking in her purpose, creating incredible tools to level up your life. Let's introduce you to the Unapologetically Favored Gift Shop, your one-stop shop for all Courtney's motivational books, custom created, inspirational gifts, and more. Products that remind you of your purpose on this planet, infused with the passion to uplift lives. Shop apparel, books, wall art, and more at shopfavored.net.
Hey, welcome back. This is the Awakened Parent Project. I'm Susan Dolce, and today I am talking with certified grief specialist Michelle Benyel. She is the founder of Good Grief Parenting, and she specializes in helping parents move through grief with their children, coach their children through their own grief. And before we go any farther, where can people find you?
They can find me on Instagram at Good Grief Parenting. And also I have a website, goodgriefparenting.com. And at both of those places, you can pick up a resource, my Good Grief Guide, and you can also connect with me to have a conversation and enroll in my program, which I think we're going to talk about a bit later.
Yes.
Or do you want me to talk about it now?
Well, you know, since you brought it up, let's talk about it now. I was going to bring it up.
Okay. My program is called See Your Way Forward After Child Loss, because when you lose a child, that is really hard to do. When you have a young family and a child is lost, like you say, that is different than losing them at 53, though it's never easy to lose a child. You lose potential, you lose dreams, you lose, you know, everything you thought you were going to have. And so it's hard to see your way forward. And what I found looking at Facebook groups and other places where parents get together is that there are many people who simply don't know how to live forward. I use the term live forward because I want to focus on the idea that you're still living and your other child is still living and that life is still good and you're going forward and you get to make that choice. But you're trying to do the two hardest things you'll ever have to do as an adult, and that is parent a child, which is hard enough to do on its own, and then parent while you are grieving. And how do you possibly do those two things at the same time? I think the thing that defines what I do best is a quote that I found by an author named Anne Royfe. She wrote this after her husband died. She said, "Grief is in two parts. The first part is loss, and the second part is the remaking of life." And we have grief support groups to help us with loss, with that devastation. But when you're a young family, you get out of that 8-week support group, and then you say, okay, now what do I do? My whole lifetime's ahead of me. My daughter was 3.5. Her whole lifetime was ahead of her. How do I make sure she grows up whole and happy? She just told me half of her was gone, and that's not okay. I didn't know how to do that. My focus at that moment was on her, but I quickly learned that I need, you know, that the adult needs as much help as anyone. So See Your Way Forward After Child Loss is 7 weeks of helping you recognize how grief is impacting you as a family, and then how to make choices that are the right choices for you. No one else makes them. You make them about how you want to live forward. And I have four things that I focus on. And the first one is those, what I call good grief beliefs, which is dispelling all of that misinformation that we have about how awful and unbearable grief is. It's very painful, but it's good. And then the second piece is that idea that people give us that we're supposed to somehow move on. It was Freud way back in the decades ago who thought that the purpose of grief was to get over the relationship and move on. The griever instinctively knows that's not the best thing to do, but everyone tells us we should move on. So I talk about continuing bonds, which is how to live forward, carrying that relationship, and also how do you deal with the other relationships around you, whether it's, the other adult in the family, other members of the family, families and friends, all of those change when you lose a child. So it's that continuing bonds. And then the idea that the living child needs a lot of support and healthy messages because they're still there, but they see you so much wanting that other child there. And it's so easy for a child to feel like maybe they should have died instead, or maybe you don't care as much about them. There's a lot of insecurity for them. So one of the huge parenting pieces is reinforcing essential messages for that child. And then the last piece of the good grief parenting approach is the actions that we put into place, the choices, the solid, intentional choices we make as parents to carry forward these skills and behaviors and things we learn about living forward that are going to help us be a family with bright possibilities and even joy in our future. So in 7 weeks, I help parents get the skills and the insights that they need. And more importantly than that, tap into their own wisdom, because you have so much of it, and just have confidence in yourself as a parent, knowing what's best for your family, and then giving you permission to live forward in the way that's right for your family, and have tools to do that.
Yeah, one of the things I have learned over my lifetime, and I'm not, it's no surprise to anybody, but I think sometimes it is when it's fresh, and that's that grief has no timeline.
Yes.
Grief has no timeline. Comes at the most unpredictable moments. Things can be sailing along and you feel like you have grieved, and then your hair falls out.
Oh. Yes.
Then your hair falls out, and then you realize, wait a minute, maybe I haven't really grieved properly, or I haven't really processed all the emotions.
Yes.
So we were going to talk about four keys mm-hmm. to help children heal. And one of the things, one of the keys you say is to model self-care. And when yes. I saw this, I asked myself, what does self-care, I know what self-care looks like for me and as an adult. I talk with moms about it all the time, oxygen mask for you first and all mm-hmm, that. Mm-hmm. But I'd never really thought about what self-care looks like for a child.
Well, that is one of the most important reasons why I tell you to model it, because children are going to learn from you. And the way it looks for a child is the same way that it looks for you. But children aren't always supported in those things. For you, what is self-care? It's whatever you need in the moment what you need to do to get your needs met. Sometimes it's the permission to be away from what's happening and have someone else take care of things and not you. Sometimes it's learning how to pay attention to your body. When I started talking about how to help kids with grief, and that paying attention to your body is a big part of it, recognizing what your body's doing when you're feeling these feelings and how your body's telling you what's going on. And, we can help kids with this. What we talk about with grief is the same thing we talk about with anger or some of those other emotions that we help kids with, is paying attention to when it's coming and then how do you handle it. breathing is a big part, helping kids recognize that they can relieve some of those really difficult feelings, grief, anger, even sadness, by doing some breathing, relaxing, some of those kinds of mindfulness things that we hear more about now than we did when I was first experiencing this. And I also learned, because this was not anything I grew into adulthood doing, I realized when I started knowing how important this was for kids, that I really don't pay a whole lot of attention to what my body tells me. I don't really do that with my emotions. And I didn't realize until I started sort of looking into this, that even helping kids visualize a favorite place or a calming place is something that can help them when they're, you know, feeling traumatized or grieved or angry or sad about something. So, but the main thing that kids need to see and hear from us is, I just really have some big feelings, some hard feelings right now, and I need to go be by myself. So I've asked Auntie to play with you this afternoon, and I'm going to be in my room, and you know, if you really need me, you can come and knock on the door, but otherwise I will come out later. Telling the child how you're feeling and what you need. How many adults have grown into adulthood not having been given permission to respond these ways as a child? And how many kids are told to participate in something when they don't feel like it, told to behave when they're full of anger because something horrible's happened, without someone recognizing that they've got something they need to deal with, not in the way that we want them to right now. And so giving them permission to, you know, feel their feelings and then helping them find ways to get rid of it. When my son was experiencing his cancer, he was angry. He would become a cheetah and he would hit the nurses. And I was so appalled by that. But the nurses and doctors would say, oh, it's okay. We like kids like this because that means he's fighting it and we like him to have spunk. Well, when I realized that, I mean, they were the ones that taught me, no, this is okay. Instead of being alarmed with David, I would acknowledge how he was feeling. And I got him a blow up boppy thing that he could wrestle with. And I would talk to him and say, oh, I know you're mad. I'm mad about this too. And we had different conversations. And that is all self-care. We're teaching them self-care when we acknowledge what they need and when we acknowledge what we need.
Yeah. And I was going to say, I think people, and I don't know if assume is the right word, but I think they look at children and they think that they aren't affected, that they don't necessarily right. grieve, that it's like, oh, they're too little to understand what's going on, or you know, they might not understand the concept of death. And so they just yes. they think that, you know, it's not going to affect them. Mm-hmm. And that's just not true.
Right, right. One of the stories I share that really drives that home, and it was fortunate that we experienced it so early, was for my daughter's sake, because it was the first night my son went to the hospital overnight after he was diagnosed, and he was there with his dad, and I was home with his sister, and she was 15 months old. And I was not a crumpled mess that night. Of course, we as a family had been through this horrible discovery, and she had sensed all of that. But at home, I was, you know, I was okay. I was okay. She wandered around the house, upstairs and downstairs, just wailing and making an inhuman sound. I had never heard a human being do this before. And I was just alarmed because she sounded like an animal. And I would go to her and try to comfort her, and she'd push me away and throw herself on the floor. She was just feeling with every ounce in her body what was happening to our family. So I knew from that moment on, that she was experiencing this trauma with us, with every bit of her, and that we needed to be paying attention to that as well as to our son. Often adults don't get that opportunity. And like her saying at the age of 3 and a half, mommy, half of me is gone. How many kids say that? Right. But many of them feel it. And so I just really feel that she was my perfect case study for being able to tell adults, yes, these little ones do feel and do experience. We don't see it because they don't do it the same way we do. They often, as you know, Susan, and I'm sure you know, help parents understand this all the time, that kids process these things through play. And so after my daughter said, mommy, half of me is gone, she didn't always look like she half of her was gone. She'd play a lot. But if I listened, I could hear her singing by herself. Oh, how I wish my brother were here. I'm so sad my brother's not here. And she'd be singing to herself. So yes, we can overlook that, but they experience it very deeply.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take a deep breath. Let's take a break. This is a powerful conversation.
Yes, thank you, Michelle, for sharing
so openly and vulnerably. I am so honored to be here with you today. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Awakened Parent Project. We'll be back in a little bit.
On the Spiritual Freedom Show, you will hear the voice of an extraterrestrial master speaking through my teacher, Dr. George King, as it was recorded over 60 years ago. I'm Richard Lawrence, and on this podcast, I bring you the 9 freedoms, which I believe to be the greatest wisdom on earth, with practical ways to give global service and attain enlightenment.
One day, I arrived early to meet a friend for lunch. One of the wait staff welcomed me with a beautiful smile. It was everyday magic. We experience this kind of thing all the time, but it was magical because the smile made me feel happy and content. The Sanskrit word for smile is smitam. It means fully blossomed, fully bloomed, and expanded, like an empty field suddenly full of spring flowers. In the same way, a bright smile given freely changes everything. It can warm the heart. It can reassure or inspire or uplift. It can bring joy or lift a burden. Try it for yourself. Smitam, a smile, and discover a little everyday magic. Join me, Sarah Main, on Damayanti, the show for your soul, where we discover everyday uplifting magic together. And check out my website, damayanti.store.
Consider follow through in 5 stages. First, the vision. Describe the goal and strategy. Second, feasibility. Find out if there are constraints. Third, planning. Lay out a plan and a timetable with target dates. Fourth, action. Do the steps required to get to the finish line. And fifth, completion. Tie up any loose ends. Most people are more comfortable with either planning or doing. Strong planners may hyper-focus on planning and never get to the action. Impatient doers jump straight into action, but can get derailed if they didn't plan for contingencies. Realizing your tendencies, you can determine where your follow-through falls short. Learn the strategies that will keep you on track in my podcast, ADHD Self-Mastery, Customized Strategies for Your Unique Brain.
Back. This is the Awakened Parent Project. I'm Susan Dolce, and I'm chatting with Michelle Benio today. She's a certified grief specialist. Her company is Good Grief Parenting. She's got a link. I put a link in the description of the show. If you go to transformationtalkradio.com and go to my show, there's a link to go directly to her Good Grief, the Tips? I forget what it's called.
Good Grief Guide.
Good Grief Guide, yes. But you can also go to goodgrief.com, goodgriefparenting.com. Mm-hmm. And you can also access it there. And she's taking enrollments for her seven-week
yes.
program. Mm-hmm. And that's going to start February. What
well,
day?
It's starting the end of this week.
Okay.
Yeah. But, so, you know, next week isn't too late to enroll, but we are starting with the first material this week.
Mm-hmm. So before the break, we were talking about four keys to help children heal with and grieve. And we talked about modeling self-care, and you kind of touched on nurturing continuing bonds, but let's make sure let's cover that fully.
Yes, it really is the idea that it's good to remember our loved one. As a griever, that's what we want to do. One of the hardest things about seeing your way forward is believing that somehow you need to leave this child behind, and you don't. And that also feeds into the next point which is inviting conversation. Nurturing bonds is, you know, it's speaking your child's name, speaking your loved one's name, remembering them. Oh, don't you think David would have loved this? Or telling stories. Remember that time that David did this. What I needed to do with Deanna, because, you know, we did this in our family, was also when she'd go to school, I would tell people that she had a brother who died. His name was David, and that we talk about him, and she might talk about him, and you need to know who he is. And if she talks about him, you'll talk about him with her. People don't want to do that. And so just the idea of keeping this person in conversation, keeping them alive in that way, is part of continuing bonds. I do still have a pair of my son's shoes in my closet. I have his Pokemon hat on top of my desk. I didn't get rid of everything of his. I see reminders of him throughout my home. We do things to remember him. We get a French silk pie on his birthday every year, because when he was dying, there wasn't a whole lot he wanted to eat. But he wanted French silk pie, and he could have all the French silk pie he wanted. Thank you very much. And so those are the continuing bonds, the ways that we just remember that person. And it can be even something much more, it can be, if you want it to be, keeping a place at the table. You know, it can be anything that you do to keep this person alive. And some of those things seem to be more sort of socially acceptable than others. But it's about you and your connection with that person. Death ends a life, but it doesn't end a relationship. Mm. And with the sibling, I need to say specifically with the sibling, and the young sibling. The other thing is that my daughter grew up very much with the presence of her brother and the awareness that there was someone who had been there who wasn't there now. And it impacted much of her behavior and much of her way of socializing. And that's a healthy thing, but it's also a challenging thing for her and her relationships with others. So I also want parents to recognize that continuing bond exists even if we ignore it. You know, if you're a family that doesn't talk about someone who's died, because some families don't, that bond is still there. And the healthiest thing you can do for a child is nurture it and allow it and acknowledge it. So that's the other important thing about continuing bonds.
Because I was thinking, like, if I would think, depending on how a family has learned how to deal with grief, mm-hmm. that there could be a lot of judgment around whatever rituals or methods that you have to have those continuing bonds. that there would probably be a lot of people who are like, oh my gosh, come on, get over it. It was years ago. Or
exactly.
You know, and so, and again, that goes back to how grief has no timeline. I don't care how many years have passed. And I just don't think as a culture, we embrace those sorts of rituals.
Exactly. And when that's exactly what I was thinking when I said some things are more socially acceptable. I worked at an organization for many years called Feed My Starving Children. And after my son died, I really had a hard time getting connected with children's cancer funds because I thought kids die. I want kids to live. Mm-hmm. I'm very involved with Cure Search for children's cancer now, but it took me some years. And so we would do these events. I called it David's Friends, and we would go pack these packets of food to send off to countries where kids were starving. That's a very socially acceptable thing to remember, David, when we do these events in memory of someone. But if someone came to your house and saw that you had not touched his bedroom, for example, then you might be judged because that's, you know, that's the kind of thing where people say, you know, come on, it's been however many years. So yeah, I think there is not a great understanding about, I mean, first of all, it's nobody else's business. It is okay. And secondly, it truly is healthy to be able to have that relationship as part of your living forward because it's part of who you are.
Yeah. And I mean, like I even saw that with my mom. Like, I guess the reason I'm asking that is that me and I have another brother. We would always tiptoe around it. Mm-hmm. Always tiptoe around mentioning his name, mentioning his birthday, you know, kind of like, I don't even know how she would respond mm-hmm. because I was so afraid of bringing up any memories. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we do such a disservice for our families and just the whole grief process is like, I've got a really dear friend who lost a son. She has a daughter, my Katie's age. So she's now 25, but, he was 3 or 4 when he was diagnosed with a rare mm-hmm. disease. And, he actually ended up, dying from the flu, but mm-hmm. was so immunocompromised. I mean, it was, she was in a place where she was like, this is when it's going to happen. Cause mm-hmm. he was not going to be able to live into adulthood. And all of us around her, her support system, we were not afraid of talking about Scott. Mm-hmm. We were not afraid about, sharing memories and, you know, having, events like walkathons and different things in his honor to raise money but I think it's, I mean, she was very open with it and she gave us the cue that it was okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's one of those really most devastating pieces of misinformation about grief, where it becomes this huge elephant in the room and everyone lives around it forever. And it's just really so difficult and hinders healing so much. One of the first things I do when I start working with a family or with parents is to tell them to write out their story and to tell their story. And I acknowledge that for some people that might be really hard, but I encourage them to try to do it because they find that once they've done it, they've given their story words and they're not I don't have them share it with me or people in the group or anything, but it's really just facing the story and telling the story and giving voice, even if only in written word, to the story really does break that hold that it has on us that keeps us in this horrible, dark place. speaking about it really is healing. And some people did grow up in households where that was not okay. And then, of course, children learn when they're around adults who are not, you know, everybody's feeling awful and the child can feel it all, but nobody's saying anything. What the child is learning is, when I feel this way, I can't tell anybody about it. Nobody talks about these feelings. So then they grow up to be these adults who don't know how to talk about it. So the first thing a lot of people really need is to recognize that, you know, nothing bad is going to happen if you talk about it. It's not going to be more painful, which is what you, what I think people tend to fear. It's actually going to feel good. You're going to have some relief to talk about it. And the same is certainly true of children, which, you know, we avoid talking to kids because we don't want them to experience the pain, but it's really the other way around. It's talking to them that's going to help them. So that is such a huge piece, Susan, and it's so deeply ingrained in our society as a way to handle grief. So we need to do something about that.
Just popped up, and I'm like, this is a question I've always wanted answered from somebody with your expertise.
Uh-oh, this puts me on the spot.
No, I know you will have the right answer. There would not be a wrong, right or wrong answer, but you know, when I know how hard it is if, like, I've had some friends who've recently lost parents, and how, you know, we struggle to say, you know, find the words to say, you know, I'm so sorry for your loss, or, you know, I mean, it's just, we don't have a good vocabulary around this topic. And I can't even imagine, like, I think I didn't say anything except, like, I love you and I'm here for you. Like, when somebody loses a child, a young child, like, what, I mean, give it, what do we say?
That's really the best thing to say. Don't say, one of the things that's amazing to me, and I know every single person who's lost a child knows what has experienced what I'm going to say, where someone will try to tell you they know how you feel because their parent died last year, or because they really loved their dog and they just had to put their dog down or whatever. No. For one thing, no, that's not the same. And for another thing, even me being a bereaved mom myself, I don't try to tell people, another bereaved parent, that I know how they feel, because every grief, every bereavement is unique. So all you can say is, I mean, you might even say, I can't imagine how you feel, although there are some people I've encountered who are grievers who don't like it when people say that. I think it's fine, because they don't know how I feel. So to say it, I don't have any problem with that. I'm here for you. I'm here to listen. I'm here to just be with you. Don't tell them to call you if they need something, because they won't. I used to have people tell me when they saw me somewhere, oh, I've been thinking about you, but I didn't call you because I didn't want to bother you. And I thought, I would have really have loved for the phone to ring and someone to say, I'm just thinking about you, Michelle. Or if I didn't want to talk to anyone, I wouldn't have to answer the phone, but they could leave a voice message and say, I'm thinking of you. And that would mean a lot to me. The thing to know as the support person is, there is nothing you can say. So don't try to say the right thing. Just say, I'm here for you and I'm thinking of you. And then check in on them once in a while. The other thing I would say about what we were just talking about a minute ago is to feel free to share a memory, because grievers love for their loved one to be remembered. Someone would come up to me and say, oh, I remember when David was a greeter at church. He was so cute in his little shirt. We love that. Will that make me cry? Probably yes. But, you know, I'm crying anyway. That's okay. It wasn't what you said that made me cry. It was the fact that my son died that made me cry. So that elephant in the room thing is really prevents a griever from having someone else share in the memories that are so precious to them and acknowledge that this was a really a profound loss for them.
My oldest daughter, my mom passed away about a year and a half ago. And my oldest daughter, I feel so badly that I cannot think of the name of this actor who shared this thought on grief. And he was talking about his own mother. And he said, grief is just all of the unexpressed love that
Andrew Garfield.
Is it?
I think so. I think I just saw him like yesterday saying that. I think it's funny. Otherwise, I wouldn't know.
I was so moved by that. I watched the whole thing that he was talking about his mom. He's like, you have so much love for this person that it's just, it's bigger than anything. It's, you know, it's unimaginably huge. And so grief is okay. It's just all of that unexpressed love that you didn't have an opportunity to share with that person. And that made me feel really good.
Yeah.
One other thing I just wanted to bring up, because you've talked about this in some of the papers that you've, you know, in your pamphlets and stuff. And that is euphemisms for death with kids. Because, you know, I remember, not that this is relevant, I guess it kind of is. I remember when my daughter's goldfish died. And, you know, I'm a pretty straightforward person. I actually had to euthanize the goldfish because it had some sort of growth on it. But I was like, okay, what am I going to say? What am I going to say? When I'm like, I'm just going to say the goldfish died. The goldfish was not healthy. It had a growth and the goldfish died. But there are so many people, like I said, we don't have a really good healthy vocabulary around death and dying and grief. So, I mean, how do you feel about that with kids?
Absolutely. You're right. There's a word for what happened. The word is died. It's no different than teaching a child any other word that we teach them and what its meaning is. The person that has trouble with the word is the adult, not the child. The child, to the child, you're just telling them what happened. Their body stopped working. That's an easy way to talk about when someone dies, because a child doesn't have an understanding of what death is when they're three or younger or even a year or two older. But you're giving them the accurate word so that when they're old enough to know what dead means, they'll know that's what happened to my brother. When you say they went away, that child knows that sometimes when people go away, they come back. Sometimes when people go away, they, you know, go far away. Sometimes they just go next door. Sometimes they just go to work. So we really need to use the accurate word. And then I think the thing that adults fear is, well, what do I say when they ask questions? And kids really aren't going to ask that many questions, but you just tell them the person's body stopped working. And if they ask you questions about why or whatever, you can say, you know, I don't know that, but sometimes that happens. Usually someone's really sick, and then hasten to tell them sometimes people are, you know, many times people are sick and they don't die, but when they die, their body stops working. They're not able to do the things they used to be able to do. They can't talk. They can't eat. They can't play with you. You know, and that's all they need to know to be given the truth that then as they grow up, they will understand. So, and there are so many ways we can talk about death. Before a child loses a human being. I mean, the goldfish is a good example. And yes, to tell your child that that fish died, how many parents tell some other silly story and then get themselves in trouble or go buy a replacement? And the moment the child spies it, they know it's not their goldfish. And all these things we do as adults to avoid simply helping this child experience a fact of life that they're going to experience anyway. Why not just teach them about it when it comes up naturally so they can cope with it?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I think parents often, whether you're sharing the facts of life or, you know, or death, I think as adults, we tend to overcomplicate our answers because we think we're answering for other adults and not for children.
And sometimes just if you don't know, you know, if the child asks you a question and you're not sure what they want to know, you say, well, why are you asking me that? And sometimes what they tell you is not at all where you would have gone with your answer if you had asked them that question. So if you aren't sure how to answer it, you can ask them for a clarifying piece of information to know what they want to know. And then, yes, just give them what they ask. Yeah.
Michelle, thank you so much. This has been I was so excited to talk to you again. I don't feel this topic gets discussed enough. I think the work you're doing is so important in the world. We need more Michelles.
I'm happy to be here.
You can find more about Michelle and her work at goodgriefparenting.com. And she's got a 7-week course coming up that's starting next week. So you can head over there for that enrollment. She also has her Good Grief Guide that's for free on her website, and take advantage of it, especially if you have recently experienced such a tragic and emotional loss. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for being on the show. If you want to learn more about my parent coaching, you can go to susandolce.com and check out my parent coaching packages. And the way I always like to close my show is to say, parenting is not about perfection. It's about allowing your children to be your awakening. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time. Thank you for being a part of the Awakened Parent Project. My goal with this show is to help us all become more compassionate and engaged parents by diving into the many techniques and ideologies of the conscious parenting community. This is a safe space to embark on a practical and spiritual journey of self-exploration and expand our ideas about conscious parenting. Got thoughts, questions, ideas? I want to hear from you. Reach out to me if there's a topic you'd like to hear covered on the show, or to share your conscious parenting story by visiting susandolce.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.